You are on the line, live on ESPN, 106.7 in Auburn, and Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga. Online on FoxSports983.com and ESPNAU.com. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
You're on the line with Noah Gardner here on ESPN 106.7 and Fox Sports Central Alabama. Number to call, 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. Rockin' solo in the studio, of course, my main man Trevor on the phones if you want to call in. Once again, 334-321-1390. Or toll free at 888-382-7502. We're taking your calls pretty much all show long. Of course, we've got two guests coming on today. Britt Bowen of the Auburn Sports Network doing play-by-play for Auburn women's basketball as well as Auburn softball and select other games as well. And coming up at 3 p.m., we'll have Zach Blackerby of the Locked On Auburn podcast and Auburn Daily. That's the Sports Illustrated Auburn fan site that people can go and check out. We've got all of those guys coming up on the show today, as well as a couple of other topics on today's program. Going to talk a little Auburn basketball as well as Auburn baseball. Headed to Montgomery to play the South Alabama Jaguars in the Riverwalk Stadium. We're going to tell you what we know about South Alabama, as well as where do the Tigers stand going into the second weekend of SEC play after what I would call an optimistic weekend. At least Auburn fans should be optimistic, I believe, coming out of the first weekend of SEC play. Not everything is hunky-dory, not everything is perfect, but I do think there are things to be optimistic about with this Auburn baseball team. Now, let's get into the main topic for today. Where does Auburn basketball go from here? And once again, if you want to call in still about the Auburn-Miami game from this past weekend, we've kind of closed the book on that, and so I'm looking ahead a way too early look to next season. If you want to talk to us about the Miami game, if you've still got thoughts about that and you missed yesterday's show, please feel free to call in. And if you want to talk about the future for the Auburn men's basketball program, we'll talk about that with you as well, in addition to Auburn baseball, Auburn football with spring practice and everything going on. We got a fun show planned for everybody today. So let's get into it. Our first topic of today's show, where does Auburn basketball go from here? And for the entirety of this segment, I'm going to do a too early depth chart look for Auburn basketball and what that looks like, because we discussed this a little bit on yesterday's show, and I wanted to make sure that I did some research, compiled some information, and look at what the structure of this roster looks like going into next season for Auburn men's basketball. And so we'll break down each position, and we'll give you a depth chart look at that, as well as where do the scholarship numbers stand right now. I'm going to go ahead and say this, some notes about this depth chart look, and I'll try and remind everybody throughout this segment for anybody tuning in as we go along. But some notes, some things to get out of the way before we dig into this. This way-too-early depth chart is assuming that Jabari Smith and Walker Kessler both declare for the NBA draft. I think Jabari Smith, the way that he talked in the post-game presser, of course, when he was blatantly asked about it, he said he hadn't made up his mind yet. But when you also say a quote like, I would choose Auburn 1,000 times if I did it over again, right? It sounds like it's over, right? Because you're talking about this past year. And honestly, he's a top three draft pick. It seems like a lock for that, Lord willing, of course. And then he could very well be the number one overall draft pick, right? And so I have a hard time believing that he will return to the Plains for another season. And if you think that because he had a bad game on Sunday, or that he had a couple of bad games throughout the year, and you think that all of a sudden he needs to return, get out of here with that. That's ridiculous. Jabari Smith, as far as his talent is concerned, he's ready to go to the league. And I think he's going to get exceptional coaching, and that's nothing against this coaching staff. He's going to get better coaching in the NBA in terms of being able to flesh out his skills for the NBA. That's why those coaches coach in the NBA. And so, once again, nothing against Bruce Pearl and his staff. I just think there's going to be staffs in the future that are going to be able to pull out a little bit more from him at the NBA level. Let's head to the phone lines now, 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. And Jacob has called into the show now. Jacob, what's up, my man?
Noah, how's it going, man?
It's going good. Okay, so co-host Jacob Goins. Trevor just completely kept me in the dark. Jacob headed out to Lee Scott Baseball this afternoon against Glenwood on our sister station, AU100. That's why he's out for the show today. Jacob, what's up, my man?
Look, you were talking about Jabari and Walker Kessler. Let's just be honest. The guys are going pro because when they see the check and they see the money, they're going to go pro, and how could you blame them, right? They're two guys that have a lot of talent. They know what they want to do. They're going to be really, really good in the NBA. And we talked about it yesterday. They're going to develop even more in the pros than they ever did at Auburn. Jabari 100% will go. I think Walker will go as well. I just wanted to kind of say that because, you know, we would be selfish as Auburn fans to ask Jabari and Walker Kessler to come back with their potential that they have to go to the NBA.
100% agree. My man, I appreciate the call. I hope you have a good call this afternoon at Lee Scott.
Yes, sir. Have a good show, man.
Appreciate it. That was Jacob Goins, my day-to-day co-host here on the program. I had no idea he was going to call in. No idea. I thought he was setting up with Lee Scott right now. So good to hear from him today. And if you want to check out his ball game, Lee Scott taking on Glenwood, first pitch at 3:30. You can find that on AU100, our sister station, 100.3 FM here in the Auburn Opelika area. Or watch the video broadcast on the Lee Scott Sports Network Facebook page. And still talking about these two players going pro before we get into it. Walker Kessler is the other guy where maybe there is a little bit more of an argument to say that he could come back to college. But here is my response as to why I think he should go pro and why I think he's ready to go pro. He's 2 years removed from high school now. He's completed two college basketball seasons. He just popped off this year. I don't see how he's going to do any more next season with this basketball program. I don't see how he's going to take that much more of a drastic leap next basketball season that would leapfrog him well into the lottery, which would justify him returning. If he could legitimately, without getting hurt, climb into the thick of the lottery by his play next season, it would make sense because you would make a lot more on your rookie deal. You would. The reality is, I don't think that's going to happen, and here's why. Every single season, there is an assortment of front court players that have astronomical athleticism, jump out of the gym guys, even though they may be 6'11", 7 feet tall, excellent rebounders, excellent inside scores, guys that can create their own shot, the back-to-basket game. And not saying that Walker Kessler can't do some of those things, but there is going to be a new crop of players next season that are going to possess certain intangibles that Walker Kessler will not get by coming back. And I think Walker Kessler's game, and a perfect example of this is the reason why Chet Holmgren is a top five pick in the NBA draft, the top three pick in the NBA draft, very possibly the number one overall pick in the NBA draft. There's a reason why Chet Holmgren is widely regarded as a top three guy. And Walker Kessler is hanging on first round, top 20, maybe. He's probably in the 20 to 30 range, right? And there's nothing wrong with that. That's going to get you onto a roster. You're going to get to play. We've seen JT Thor play this year, and he was a second rounder. Sharif Cooper's got some run. Not a lot, but we saw those two guys get some action. Chuma Okeke was drafted 15th. Got onto the roster, obviously had to sit out a year because he was hurt, but now he's getting some run with the Magic. There's nothing wrong with getting picked 20th. And if that's where you can go, that's when you should go. And I just don't see Walker Kessler doing anything more to add to his draft stock by coming back to get him into the thick of the lottery, because there are going to be players 2 years younger than him coming out as freshmen, maybe even 1 year younger than him as sophomore, that possess certain intangibles and certain skills that I don't think he's going to pick up at Auburn. And once again, that's not a slight on Auburn's coaching. I just don't think he's going to pick that up in this system. And with Bruce Pearl saying, even after the Miami loss, that he was excited to build this team around Jalen Williams, I think that's also a tip of the hat that Walker Kessler is probably gone. And no, Walker Kessler does not need another year to develop. His skill set is what it is right now, and it's ready for the NBA, and it's ready for NBA coaching to take it to the next level. I don't think Walker Kessler is going to end up being some superstar center in the NBA. And there's nothing wrong with that. There are a lot of the game is moving away from centers like Walker Kessler. And I know he can stretch the floor a little bit, and maybe his three-point shot does develop. There is something to work with there. I do believe that. It didn't come on like I wanted it to this year, but he did have his moments where it looked like, okay, this guy can stretch the floor. An NBA team will be able to pull that out of him. You know why I think that? Because I saw Vukovic for the Orlando Magic, now with the Chicago Bulls, have the ability to shoot a three-pointer. Even Joel Embiid can do it to a degree, right? Guys that came into the league that are playing the center position that couldn't shoot the three but had at least somewhat of an ability to shoot the basketball, whether it was in the mid-range game, which was the case for Vukovic, those guys have developed decent three-point jumpers for a center. I think they could do that with Walker Kessler, who's clearly already, you can see it, possesses some type of range to their game. But that's not going to develop in college. And I do think he needs to go to the next level to go and get the coaching that's going to pull that out of him. Now, do I think he's going to end up being an incredible center or anything like that in the league? Like I just said, I don't think that's what's going to happen. And once again, that's not me knocking the guy. He very well could turn into that. He's going to have to put on some weight. He's going to have to learn how to create his own shot in the post more consistently. I don't think he was consistently, even against the good bigs in this league. Garrison Brooks denied him a lot of buckets. Oscar Tshiebwe, it was kind of a 50-50 matchup there, but Colin Castleton was a player that he struggled with. The best bigs in the league that he matched up with, we saw his offensive ability take a hit. And Auburn set up a lot of shots for him on the pick and roll, and when that wasn't, and he did get a lot of putback opportunities off of offensive rebounds, but that's not creating your own shot in the post. He doesn't have that back-to-the-basket ability. And I also think that his jump shot needs to come along a little bit too, away from the basket, and that will turn him into a more robust player. But he's got the rebounding. He's got the innate natural shot blocking. He's going to do great at blocking shots in the league, and I think he's going to be just fine as a rebounder. 7'1". He's going to do just fine in that. That's why he's going to the NBA. There aren't many guys like Walker Kessler out there. The reality is he's got to develop more of the offensive game for him to establish himself in the league, and only the NBA can pull that out of him. Only the NBA can do that. And so I don't see him returning either. I don't think it's a good idea to return. I think it's best for those two guys to leave. So as we go along the show today, we're talking about Auburn's too early depth chart for the basketball team, where Auburn is going from here with the roster. I made it without Jabari Smith and Walker Kessler because I expect those two guys to go. Additionally, anybody currently on the roster, I'm expecting to still be here next year. At least I made this depth chart with the assumption that they are still going to be here next year. I should amend what I just said there a little bit. I didn't mean to say it like that. I meant that I made this assuming that they were still here. I do think some of these guys will transfer, like a Devin Cambridge or a Chris Moore or a Stretch Akinbola. Some of those guys, at least one of those guys, I would imagine will probably transfer out of the program. You run into the end of your collegiate eligibility. It's clear that you're probably not going to be at the forefront of this team ever. You may want a larger role just to enjoy playing basketball. You're not going to the NBA. None of those three players are going to play in the NBA, I would assume. I'm never going to say anything with an absolute, but I don't think those guys are probably going to the NBA, right? They're not going to make it there, I don't think. Odds are they probably will not. But go and enjoy your college basketball career. Go and play somewhere where you're going to enjoy it. Go play at a mid-major if you can, or a small Power 5 conference, and go and be a dude there, right? And maybe a change of scenery, maybe a change of your role will help pull something out of you that didn't happen at Auburn, right? And I think you can have a really fun time being a college basketball player doing that. So I do think there are a couple players, and we'll get to those as we go along, but I already mentioned a few in Devin Cambridge or Chris Moore or Stretch Akinbola. I do think there are a couple of guys there that may be better suited for them to search for another location if they want a larger role. But if they don't and they want to be a part of this basketball program because they like being here, and I think a couple of those guys definitely fit that, like Stretch Akinbola, if they want to stick around and if they're allowed to stick around, then come on, enjoy the trip. So once again, breaking this down, it is assuming that everybody that's on the roster currently, they will be here next year. Just because I don't want to play the guessing game on who's going to transfer and whatnot, because I don't have enough information there. I'll say some guys who might be transfer options, but right now I've got them in the depth chart. And then it's also assuming that Jabari Smith and Walker Kessler is gone. And so we'll start at the point guard position. And I think this is the most solidified position probably on the entire team. Honestly, the two backcourt positions, point guard and shooting guard, are the two most solidified positions on the team from top to bottom. There might be a bit of a position battle between a Zepp Jasper and a Wendell Green. And that's because what you've gotten out of Zepp Jasper, will be going into his fifth or sixth year of college basketball. I think it's his sixth year of college basketball that he'll be going into. And granted, there may have been some injuries in the past and, you know, some extenuating circumstances with the COVID rule and whatnot. But Zepp Jasper's going into his sixth year of college basketball. Development has already occurred. That he has probably reached the end of his potential. What you've seen with Zepp Jasper is probably who he is. Maybe he can get back to what he was scoring like at College of Charleston, because I do think there's some untapped scoring potential there, and it's because we saw it at College of Charleston, and we didn't really see it a whole lot at Auburn, except in flashes, right? Maybe that was because the SEC is a lot tougher environment. Maybe that's not there for him in the SEC. Regardless, what you've seen with Zepp Jasper is pretty much what you're going to get. I don't think you're going to see Zepp Jasper turn into somebody next season that's going to average 16 points a game. Wendell Green, on the other hand, this year he had his many occasions where he filled it up. Wendell Green obviously did not end the year like you wanted to see him end, and I think that tells you that there's still some development to be had there. He's going into just his third year of college basketball, his second year in the SEC. I would argue that that jump out of Eastern Kentucky to the SEC, I would argue that that was like kind of a prelude, like it was kind of a middle location between high school and college, which it was, right? But it's the middle location between high school and then the big leagues. There was still an acclimation period probably to having to play in the SEC for a player like Wendell Green. And now he's got 1 year of experience under his belt. Let's see what that jump in year two looks like after he's played in the league. And then what you've gotten out of Wendell Green after this third year that he's been at Auburn, so after this next season, that's probably where he's at. And that would have followed a similar trajectory to a player like a Jared Harper. Jared Harper probably wasn't going to get any better his senior season versus his junior season. I think looking at development trajectories in college basketball, that is 100% true. It would have followed that trend. And so, Wendell Green, I'm expecting to get better going into next year. How much better will determine whether or not he ends up being the starting point guard. I think there is going to be a bit of a battle there between Zepp and Wendell. And I thought about this for a little bit, wondering who would start. And I've got Zepp right now as the incumbent starter because that is what he did this year. He's got that experience. Doesn't turn the basketball over. Bruce likes to set the tone with defense. And you may still see Zepp start next year and Wendell come off the bench and Wendell may play 30 minutes. It's very possible. And Zepp could still just play 18. That dynamic may stay the same. But if Wendell takes massive leaps forward in all areas of his game, maybe he could start. Because I don't think there's a whole lot separating those two players there. Wendell's offensive ability is a lot further along than maybe, or has offered a little bit more to Auburn this year in the way of baskets that he contributes to, whether it be assists or buckets that he made himself. He did more than Zepp Jasper did this year on average. And it wasn't just because of the minutes played. There were a lot of times where Zepp Jasper might have shot the ball twice and had just one assist, maybe didn't turn the basketball over, but he played 18 minutes. Proportionally speaking, Zepp Jasper still wasn't producing like he needed to in the minutes that he was given. And so I think there's going to be a little bit of a battle there at point guard. And it's possible that maybe Wendell Green Jr., with this offseason development and Bruce Pearl being able to fully work with him and rein him in, now that he's got film on him against SEC competition, knows better how he can adjust him and his game to the SEC now after having a year to look at it, there is going to be an opportunity there possibly for Wendell Green to jump above Zepp Jasper on the depth chart. But regardless, those are your two point guards. Whether it's Zepp as a starter or as a backup, or Wendell Green as a starter or as a backup, those are your top two point guards. And then Trey Donaldson will be at least some depth at a position where there's been no depth. Imagine what happened. Do you remember what happened when Auburn had Zepp Jasper hurt in those two games in the middle of SEC play? And it wasn't pretty, Georgia and Arkansas. And you thought this year that Auburn wasn't going to have the issues that they had the year before because everybody was talking about how deep this Auburn team was. Point guard depth, legitimate, strong, quality point guard depth has been a problem for this team. And at least having Trey Donaldson on the roster will be able to, whether or not he's a quality depth piece, because there's probably some development that needs to be had there, and I think Trey Donaldson can turn into a good basketball player for Auburn, but there's probably some development to be had there considering he's a freshman. Jared Harper needed to develop. He had a decent freshman year. You could see that there was a lot of potential there, but Ronnie Johnson, it was also nice to have Ronnie Johnson on that basketball team that season. And that's not a slide against Jared Harper. I'm just saying there's going to be some development there, obviously, because he's a three-star point guard coming out of college, right? And I'm not knocking that. Jared Harper was a three-star point guard coming out of high school. But Trey Donaldson is significant at the point guard position because he's athletic, can play some defense, he's got some size on him, and he's going to be able to give those two breathers, especially if one of those two players were to get hurt or get banged up over a little bit of time. There's some depth there now, which is crucial for this Auburn basketball team at a position that they have had little depth over the years. Back on the line on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central, Alabama. Number to call, 334-321-1390. We're toll free at 888-372-7502. Coming up in our next segment, we got Britt Bowen of the Auburn Sports Network joining us, so stay tuned for that conversation. Going to talk some Auburn softball as well as some Auburn baseball with big time Britt Bowen. Does some play-by-play for Auburn softball. Let me tell you, that softball team, top of the SEC standings, in case you didn't know, as well as best record overall in the Southeastern Conference, 26-2 overall. Uh-oh, they're back. Now, I don't think it's been the most difficult SEC stretch to open up the season, but they're handling business, and they're 5-1, and that's best record in the SEC at this point. So we'll talk with Britt about that coming up, as well as Auburn baseball, as they take on South Alabama tonight in Montgomery. That's at the Riverwalk Stadium because Alabama won't play Auburn anymore in that annual rivalry game that they used to play in Montgomery. Shame, shame. All right, still talking about Auburn basketball and what a too-early depth chart looks like for Auburn basketball moving forward. We just went through the point guard position, Zeb Jasper, Wendell Green Jr., and Trey Donaldson. Once again, if you're just now joining us, some notes here. This is assuming Jabari Smith and Walker Kessler go pro, and I have not taken any players out that could be potential transfers. If you're on the roster right now, I'm assuming you're going to be on the roster for next year. With that being said, I do think some guys are going to transfer out, and so it'll be pertinent as time goes along and as we see decisions made over the next couple months. We'll just keep you updated on the show, and we'll talk about it. But moving on to the shooting guard position now, and I think this one is pretty locked in as well, just like the point guard position. I don't see anything really changing too much here. At shooting guard, KD Johnson is going to start. Bruce loves KD Johnson, and he's a great defender. Fouls maybe a little bit too much, but he's a great defender. Needs to reel in his offensive game a little bit. But he was at times spectacular this year and at other times out of control. What concerns me the most with Auburn's backcourt, as we've talked about these two positions, is looking at the tenure of Bruce Pearl. I want you to call in about this if you know somebody. Legit. I'm not going to argue with you. This is legit. Like, help me out here. Name a player that has significantly improved or developed with their three-point jump shot in the Bruce Pearl tenure on a year-to-year basis. If somebody had a broken shot, have they gotten better by the end of their career? Trevor on the phone said Bryce Brown. I said he came in as a good shooter. He was an excellent shooter from the start. He developed as a more all-around basketball player by the time it got to a close. A more consistent player, I would say. So if you do want to say that his three-point jump shot maybe wasn't as streaky by the end, that's fair. But I am curious. Name me a player, and I'm not going to disagree with you to say it. Name me a player that has improved with their three-point jump shot in the Bruce Pearl tenure. Because I'm looking at this roster right now, and Al Flanagan maybe is the only one from his freshman year to his sophomore year that we saw that jump. But the question is, can he reach that after what happened this year? Because it was broke. Devin Cambridge hasn't gotten better at shooting threes. If anything, he's gotten worse. Jalen Williams, Trevor says, I think he came in being able to shoot that shot. But maybe it's marginally gotten better. Let's head to the phone lines. 334-321-1390. We got 2 minutes left here in this segment. Dan, what's up?
Not much. I was going to disagree with you on one thing.
Go for it.
Involving Kessler. Okay, coming into this year, Kessler, you know, after what happened at North Carolina, nobody expected him. I'm not saying I didn't expect him to do a lot better, but he was not a high draft pick coming into this year. And just his defensive prowess and his finishing ability has elevated him up to the top. But his offensive game has a long way to go, whether it's baby hook shots, whether it's the 10-foot jumper, whether it's working on his three-point game. There's a lot of areas where he can improve.
I agree with that.
And right now, if you look the way the NBA works, okay, let's say he is a first-round pick. Let's say he's 25, okay? The money that a 25 guy makes coming out for his first four-year contract is drastically different than a guy if he was picked number 15 or in the top 10.
100%.
Coming into this next year, Kessler will be considered one of the top centers in the nation, period. So he will already be on everyone's, in their eyesight. And I think if he were to become that guy that you can just throw the ball to down low and let him create his own shot and score, then I think he could elevate himself to a top five pick. So there is a lot of room for him to grow and increase his money. So all Auburn really needs to do is give him a good NIL deal. That'll make it worth him staying for a little bit. And he can definitely improve his game and then be a much higher draft pick next year.
So here's the only reason why
I look at it.
And I don't think you said anything factually incorrect there. The only reason why I disagree, and Dan, we got to go, so I appreciate the call. I'll just say this before I get out of here. The only reason why I disagree with Dan there is I don't believe Auburn is going to do that for him. I don't think Auburn can improve his offensive game. We said the same thing about Austin Wiley. He may have gotten worse. Austin Wiley had all the intangibles in the world. And I think an NBA team could do better at developing Walker Kessler's offensive game than Auburn can. Plus, he's going to be 3 years removed out of high school at that point, and there's going to be a lot of freshmen coming in that are already going to have that style of game, and I think it's just going to kind of net out at zero, and he's not really going to climb the draft boards. We got Britt Bowen on the other side of this break here on the Line. Back on the Line on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central, Alabama. Number to call, 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. Appreciated the call from Dan there in that previous segment. Ran out of time with him. We'll get back to that topic later on. I do want to address some of the things in more detail, some of the stuff that he said. And I liked his call a lot. He made some great points. I've just got some counters to that I do want to point out about Walker Kessler's draft prospects. But joining us now in this segment, we got Britt Bowen of the Auburn Sports Network with us. Britt, how you doing today, my man?
Man, I'm good. I'm tired, but I'm good. Big walk-off win last night for Auburn softball and kept me up late, but 5-1 in the SEC, man. It feels pretty good.
What a moment for you, man. I mean, that's got to be an exciting game to call, and this team, they've got something different than maybe they had last year, clutch hitting.
Yeah, and there's some different things about this team that a lot of people don't see, the things that just don't show up on the stat sheet. Obviously, the hitting has improved. I mean, we are, in the middle of March, and the team has already doubled its home run total from last year. We hit 22 home runs as a team through a full season in 2021. I think we're at 44 this year as a team, which is just nuts. But a lot of things about this team that I really like is – no, they play together. I mean, and when you talk to the kids, and I'm talking on air, off the air, and just watching them interact with one another, I mean, there's a camaraderie and a team chemistry that I haven't seen in that dugout in a couple of years. And I think that has rubbed off on the team in a positive way, and it's carrying over onto the field. I mean, they have the youngest roster in the SEC with the amount of freshmen and the amount of sophomores that they have, and they're fearless. I mean, they've had to come from behind, I think, in at least three SEC wins, if not four, and they don't let the moment get too big. At least they haven't so far, and they're just an impressive group of kids to watch and an impressive group of kids to be around.
Speaking with Britt Bowen of the Auburn Sports Network about this Auburn softball team that currently has the best record in the Southeastern Conference overall and the best conference record after the first two series of the SEC season, 26-2 overall, 5-1 in the conference. I want to ask you this, Britt, because I don't think a lot of people anticipated that Auburn softball was going to be quite the rebuild that it was when Mickey Dean took over just a couple of years ago after the Myers era. How has his tone maybe changed when you've discussed the team with him? How is his, you know, personal positioning with the team, you know, and the way that he views it and the way that he talks about the team as maybe some of the fruits of his labor, they're kind of starting to show?
Well, number one, first and foremost, this is the first year that Coach Dean has a team that that he recruited every single player on the team. Not a single player on this team, I think, played for the Myers. So, and not to get into any history or any of that stuff, but when you're a new coach coming into any program, regardless of situation, building a culture is important, and that takes time. It takes time to rebuild and recover what that softball program has been through over the last 5 years. And I think his recruiting speaks for itself. I mean, he's got back-to-back top five, top ten recruiting classes. I mean, that's huge. That's absolutely huge. That's step one right there. And number two, I think it's the type of kids he's recruited. You know, I mentioned before that this team has a different camaraderie about them. They have a closeness. They play together. They play for each other. The team went on a team retreat in the preseason, and the team voted on team leaders this year, and it equivalent to a team captain. 18 kids, Noah, 18 kids on this roster got votes to be a team leader. I mean, that's insane. That's the first time, I think, for Coach Dean that's ever happened in his career. I also think there are some other things intact. I think having Eugene Lindsay and Emily Carasone, he's got his assistants returning. They're his longest tenure assistant coaches that he's had since he's been in Auburn in 5 years. And finally, I think this team has taken ownership of the weight room. P.K. Karkoska, the strength and conditioning coach, and Mickey Dean, they've come up with a masterful plan to get this team to buy into the weight room, and it's paying off. I mean, you can look at kids like Carly McConaughey, Michaela Packer, how much stronger they've gotten this year. I mean, Carly, you're talking about a kid that got one hit last year in her sophomore season. Here she is starting every game but one so far in left field. And the freshmen coming in with the power that they've added just in the 6-7 months they've been on campus. And, you know, so I think all of those things combined, and I'm sure there are some other elements that I'm not aware of, but I think when you combine those things, it's created a winning culture and a winning environment so far for Auburn softball.
Not to take anything away from what this team has done up to this point. I want to make sure I'm clear about that, but the first two series for Auburn softball in the SEC have been against two teams that right now are in the bottom four, bottom five in the league. And once again, this is a deep league, so that's not saying a whole bunch there. But then you get a Kentucky team that's top 15 maybe in the rankings, but they too find themselves in the bottom half of the league. As this schedule gets tougher and tougher, because Florida's 2 weeks away, you still got series against teams like Arkansas, Georgia, and Tennessee at the tail end. As the schedule gets tougher, maybe what areas does Auburn need to continue to add to so that when that time does come, that they are challenging themselves with the best teams that the conference has to offer, that they too can find themselves in that tier?
No question. And there's still a lot of room to improve being at 5-1 in the SEC. And I think the number one areas you look at are defense and pitching right now. The defense has made far too many errors. I mean, in the game they lost in 11 innings on Saturday, game one to South Carolina, Auburn committed 7 errors despite scoring 7 runs off 9 hits. And anytime you commit 7 errors, I don't care who you play or at what level, that's not winning softball. And Auburn knows that. They had a lengthy team meeting after the game. They had a lengthy team meeting the next morning, and they've adjusted. They did have one error in each of game two and game three, but that's an area that's got to improve, because they've got to be able to help themselves out. Look, Auburn's offense has put up huge numbers this weekend. against South Carolina, and that's great. But in this league and the pitching that Auburn's going to face, Noah, you just mentioned Kentucky, Florida, Arkansas are the next three series that the Tigers will have. Auburn's going to face some pretty good pitching. You know, so the offensive numbers you expect at some point to probably go down in some capacity. So pitching and defense has got to be able to pick Auburn up. And I mean, because look, you're going to be in one run games. Now, to Auburn's credit, they've won 3 1 run games in SEC play thus far. I think they lost around 13 or 14 1 run games last year. So they're learning how to win close games, but in order to do that, again, you're going to have a lot more of those in the SEC. Is you got to play defense. And Auburn this weekend, excuse me, they adjusted Nelia Peralta at shortstop. They moved her in the middle of game two, or excuse me, maybe it was game one. They moved her to from shortstop to third after starting every game at short this year. And then also Rose Roach has come in off the bench and has made a big impact. She's a starting shortstop each of the last two games. So that's the biggest difference Auburn has made defensively. Now, Denver Bryant at second base, such a talented athlete, fun to watch. She's emotional, plays with passion. She's got a little bit of improving to do, and I think Bree Ellis does as well. I think the defense as a whole, as a group, communication's got to get better, and that's going to be the focus this week at Kentucky. And of course, for Auburn pitching, look, Maddie Pinta has been stellar. She's been spectacular. Auburn's got to get just a little bit more out of K.K. Dismukes and Shelby Lowe. K.K. has had some highs and lows. Shelby hasn't been able to go as deep as we're used to seeing her go. So we've got to be able to get some more depth in our pitching in the weeks to come, because we all know in this league you have got to have at least two arms, if not three, to have a legitimate chance.
SEC honors came down this week. Jesse Blaine, freshman of the week in the SEC. Talk to us a little bit about her and her impact on the team as a rookie in the SEC.
Man, just a mature kid. Just a mature kid. When you talk to Jesse, you'll learn very quickly. You don't think you're talking to a freshman. The kid is mature beyond her years. She cares about her teammates. She puts her team first. She's one of the first players I've ever been around that truly just does not have an ego. At least I haven't noticed one. And I'm sure she does when she's between the lines. But just impressive to watch. Raw power. She's one of the strongest kids in the weight room. A kid on defense that can play catcher or first base, but both of those positions fairly deep right now with Aspen Godwin, Aubrey Lisenby, and Bree Ellis at first base. So, you know, for Jesse, her bat, her strength, Coach Dean in the DP spot, it's been the perfect fit for her. And this weekend, I mean, she kept Auburn in it with a game-tying 3-run home run on Saturday. I felt terrible for her because I think she was like 3-for-4 on Saturday, and 4 RBIs, had her best day of the season, but Auburn as a team played at their worst. Well, she came back in game two on Sunday night, put up another 2-hit performance, another 3-run home run, had 4 RBIs in that game. Jesse finished the weekend with 8 RBIs, 4 hits on the weekend, and she was walked twice last night in game three. So it's going to be interesting to see how teams pitch to her in the future and how she continues to get better and to be an impact. She's a great hitter hitting in the cleanup spot for Auburn's lineup.
A mini break this week. You don't have a midweek game, so you got 4 days off to get ready for a road trip to Lexington. What's this week about for Auburn? Not really the series, but about these next 4 days where Auburn can maybe just get some practice and some rest in.
Yeah, we'll find out tomorrow. I'm scheduled to meet with Coach Dean tomorrow morning for a Tiger Talk interview, and I'm anxious to hear about that myself, because the team is mandated to get 1 day off per NCAA rules. So I think that's typically Monday or Tuesday. Well, since they played Monday, it has to be Tuesday, and I'm sure they'll practice tomorrow on Wednesday, and then load up, head to Lexington, and get a good practice in on Thursday night before taking on what's going to be a very good Kentucky team. And folks, if you want to see, if you want to see Kentucky, they get a chance against the number one team in the country tonight in the Oklahoma Sooners in the midweek. So I'm looking forward to following that game closely. I know Kentucky, they gave Alabama three close games. They lost two one-run games at Rhodes Stadium last weekend. So it's going to be a battle. I mean, nothing about going on the road this weekend or any week in the SEC. I don't care where you go. It's going to be tough. You truly have to take it one week at a time. And no, I know you and I were talking about Florida, Arkansas, and the other series that's coming up. But I can guarantee you this coaching staff right now and this team, it's one game at a time. I truly don't believe they look that far ahead. I don't think you can afford to, because if you do, well, that's when you're going to slip up and lose some games.
Britt, we appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today. Tell everybody how they can keep up with you, my man.
Yeah, keep up with me on Twitter at BrittBowenAU, and follow Auburn Softball as well. We're constantly tweeting out our broadcast times. We'll be on the air on Friday night. I believe it's a 5 o'clock start, first pitch from Lexington. I'll be on the call. Airtime's at 4:45. Tune in. We'll be on the air all weekend long. It's a 5 o'clock first pitch on Friday, 12 o'clock on Saturday, and for Game 3 on Sunday. No, appreciate the support, man. War Eagle.
Yeah, man, War Eagle to you as well. That was Britt Bowen of the Auburn Sports Network with us on the show. I'll tell you, look, if people were looking something to turn their attention to from Auburn basketball, Auburn baseball has got some things to like about it. I'm going to tell you, man, you've got stuff to pay attention to this spring. It's not straight to football. If you're looking for that bridge before inevitable pain, I'm joking. If you're looking for that bridge between now and football, look, there's stuff going on, and there's two good teams, and I think softball's got a chance to be really good. Of course, the SEC Baseball League is so deep. That's not saying anything against Auburn baseball. I think they've got a chance to be a good baseball team of the SEC, make the NCAA tournament. There are potentially two NCAA tournament teams here in the spring. Then, of course, gymnastics still got things going on. Auburn is truly back to doing some things outside of those main three sports of football, basketball, and baseball. The everything school mantra is definitely living large right now in the spring. There's a lot of great things to look forward to. Back on the Line, Noah Gardner here with you on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central, Alabama. Number to call, 334-321-1390, or toll free at 888-382-7502. A big thank you there to Britt Bowen of the Auburn Sports Network for joining us back in our previous segment. If you missed any of today's show, go and find the podcast wherever you get your podcast. One last segment here before we go to break for the end of hour number one. And then starting off hour number two, we'll have Zach Blackerby of the Locked On Auburn podcast and Auburn Daily with us to talk the latest in Auburn athletics, Auburn basketball, Auburn baseball. A lot of great stuff going on there with Zach and what he's got going on with his podcast, and then also the Sports Illustrated Auburn affiliate there. But before we get into our last segment, this week's Point Broadband High School Player of the Week is Auburn High Baseball's Cade Ballou. The junior outfielder went 9-for-18 for the Tigers last week, smashing one double, one triple, and two home runs. He boasted 9 RBI and came home to score 8 times. Auburn High Baseball comes into the week 13-2 overall. Cade Ballou, your Point Broadband High School Player of the Week. Point Broadband, smarter, faster fiber internet, point-broadband.com. Now getting into our last segment here of hour number one, I want to go back to a phone call that we had earlier with Dan, and you've got some time here to call in 334-321-1390 or toll-free at 888-382-7502. Anybody that wants to chime in on this, but we were talking about Walker Kessler, and he made some good points that were kind of reiterating some of the things that I was saying about Walker Kessler and how there are some holes in his game that do need to be fleshed out a little bit. The main area where I disagree with Dan on is where those areas truly will be helped, where those areas truly will take off for Walker Kessler, if they will. And so I'm going to get into that a little bit. And me and Dan agree on the back-to-the-basket game needs to develop for Walker Kessler. Shot away from the basket, whether it's the mid-range or the three-point jump shot, all of those things would elevate him to that status, being able to go to the league where maybe he would be able to get into a top 15 pick or a top 10 pick or something like that. But I'm going to break down why, once again, I think that Walker Kessler probably is better suited to go ahead and go to the league, and here's why. We're talking about the difference of, you know, somewhere maybe he's picked 20 to 30 in that range in the NBA draft, probably somewhere in the mid-20s. Okay, that is a big financial difference between 25 and the lottery. There's a big financial difference there. My point of contingency is I don't think he's going to get there. I think that this jump that we saw from Walker Kessler at Auburn is that his defense really fleshed out. His rebounding, they saw flashes at it in North Carolina. He had 8 blocks in an ACC tournament game last year. Almost had a triple-double in blocks with blocks in the ACC tournament game for North Carolina against Notre Dame back in 2020. So they saw flashes of it. Just Roy Williams and his development of players at North Carolina is on a slower curve than other places. He typically does take his guys in for 3 or 4 years. He does not do the one-and-done thing. And so he was playing behind Garrison Brooks and just didn't get that attention. North Carolina desperately wanted Walker Kessler back. Hubert Davis publicly recruited this guy back to UNC. So I think that this development would have happened for Walker Kessler this year anyway, unless he found himself caught up behind Baycott, but I think they could have coexisted in the front court. Regardless, I think that this would have inevitably happened at North Carolina. I just think the career trajectory is a little bit different. But I want you to name me a player that legit, like somebody in Auburn's time with Bruce Pearl, and Austin Wiley is the guy that I look at, but a front court player that is legit, like from start to finish, has just like popped off offensively. Help me out. Trevor's over here thinking Austin Wiley didn't get better, and he was here for 4 years. And I'm not saying that Bruce is a bad developer. That's not the tone that I'm trying to set here, but I look at even different offensive facets of guys' games. And I definitely see players get better in several categories. I see them get better at playmaking, defense, namely. I think they get better at rebounding. They're a guy like Devin Cambridge has turned into a much better rebounder than he was and a much better defender than he was at the start. Has his offensive game been fixed? I think only one player has shown like a massive leap in offensive ability from start to finish under a Bruce Pearl. And that's Alan Flanagan from his freshman year to his sophomore year. But this year was a massive step back, and a lot of that had to do with injury, right? But I'm having a hard time seeing players that have had their shots fixed, have seen and turned into good shooters when they didn't start as a good shooter. Because I can name you a lot of guys who did not get better shooting the three and were just what they were when they stepped on campus. And maybe they marginally got better. Maybe they improved like 2%, whatever. You know, they still stayed in the same bracket that they were from a statistical standpoint as a scorer. Very few guys actually just like leaped in their offensive ability over time. I think Jared Harper improved from his freshman to sophomore year, but I don't think we've seen a whole lot of guys see their offensive games massively overhauled under Bruce Pearl. That'll be something we'll keep talking about into hour number two. More of why I think Walker Kessler is going to end up being in the NBA draft this year and why it's probably a good idea. Didn't get to finish that thought there. We'll come back to that in hour number two, but we got Zach Blackerby coming up with the Locked On Auburn podcast starting at 3 p.m.
You are on the line, live on ESPN, 106.7 in Auburn and Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga. Online on FoxSports983.com and ESPNAU.com. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Back on the line, Noah Gardner here with you for hour number two of the show on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. If you missed any of the show so far, go and find the podcast wherever you get your podcast. Coming up at 3:05, we're going to have Zach Blackerby of the Locked On Auburn podcast and Auburn Daily with us. So stay tuned for that conversation. Going to continue a topic that I was talking about for a little bit. And the topic for today is Auburn basketball, where does it go from here? What does the too early depth chart look like for Auburn basketball? And so for the rest of the hour, outside of our conversation with Zach, which we will touch on this a little bit with Zach, we'll get into this. But Dan called in, and I want to finish this thought, and we keep running out of time in segments to finish this, and I do want to finish this thought. And it's not totally about Dan's call anymore. This is more me branching out to something that could be a greater issue for Auburn basketball moving forward, because I've said a few times when I've looked ahead to next year, I've said, I don't know if I really like this backcourt that much moving forward for Auburn. I think this could end up being a problem for Auburn long-term, some of the players that are brought in. Now, there is room for improvement and whatnot, but Dan's whole point about Walker Kessler was that Walker could come back for another year, get an NIL deal, and he could develop, and then maybe he could get into the lottery, which is true. That could happen. But I think this Auburn coaching staff has shown more times than not that they don't develop offensive players, or they don't develop offensive skill sets as well as they develop playmaking or rebounding or defense. They've been great at developing those areas. Guys, we have seen take leaps and bounds improvements in those areas. We have not seen someone's offensive game under Bruce Pearl legitimately take a sharp increase in what they came in with. You might only be able to find me one example that comes to mind right away who I'm like, yeah, he improved. He became more consistent from his freshman year to his junior year, and that was Jared Harper. But Jared Harper was special. I don't know if you can find someone else whose offensive game really became that much more robust, that added a whole lot more to their game as far as a scoring standpoint, or that really saw drastic increases in their field goal percentage or three-point percentage or any real area. And I can give you a ton of guys who didn't, potentially even got worse. And I'll get into that in a second, but I 100% agree with Dan. Other schools would probably be able to bring Walker Kessler back and flesh that game out in them and be able to get them maybe closer to the lottery. But the other issue that's going to work against Walker Kessler, I think, and why it's smart to go ahead and go now and why I don't think his draft stock is going to increase with another year is because there are going to be freshmen that are going to come out, a new crop of front court players like Walker Kessler, who are still more athletic than him, are 6'10" to 7 feet tall, that can jump out the gym, have all of his skills that he's got, and there may not be as much of a project on the offensive end. They may already possess those things. There are other Chet Holmgrens out there. That's going to happen in another class. And maybe there's not a Chet Holmgren in the next class, but there's going to be someone that's already got that scoring ability that's 2 years younger than Walker Kessler, and that's why they're a more attractive pick, because they're 2 years younger. And so that's not me hating on that. I do think that he can come back 100% and improve, but I don't think the coaching at Auburn is going to get him any further, or maybe even remotely further. Like, I don't think they're in the same hemisphere in terms of what the NBA can do for Walker Kessler to improve his offensive game compared to what this coaching staff can do. I mean, I'll get into it with you. I mean, you look at some of the front court players. We'll just talk about front court players for Auburn that Bruce Pearl has coached. Did they legit get better from start to finish? D'Angelo Purifoy, did he get better from start to finish? We're talking about a top 75, top 50 recruit here for Auburn. Did D'Angelo Purifoy get better? I don't think so. Did Austin Wiley get better? We're talking about one of Bruce's top recruits all time. Did Austin Wiley get better? I don't think Austin Wiley got better from an offensive standpoint. I don't think that, and that's proven by the fact that he didn't make it to the NBA, and he honestly, like, you could label that as a bust. Austin Wiley was a bust compared to what he was regarded as coming in. Horace Spencer was a top 50 recruit. Did he get better from an offensive standpoint? Because there was a lot of rock fights with Horace Spencer in the paint, and I hate to be like that, but I'm just saying, and that's just talking about some front court players that have come in. Malik Dunbar, another guy who played the small forward position. Once again, we're talking a little bit different here than Walker Kessler. I'm just going down some players and looking at how guys have developed offensively under Bruce Pearl. And that also is going to transition back. This is going to translate me back to talking about the backcourt with Auburn and how I'm kind of worried about the backcourt, and I'm worried about their three-point shooting moving on because they love to take the three-point jump shot. But talk about players that have been out in the wing or point guard positions that really legitimately improved their jump shot since they were at Auburn. Malik Dunbar's three-point percentage went down. Samir Dowdy went up like 9% from the first year that he played at Auburn to his second year, but then he went down like 12%, right? Like, I mean, it's wild. There was no clear line of development trajectory for a lot of the shooters at Auburn. Pretty much what you got with this group was pretty much what they were going to be from start to finish in terms of their shooting ability. And so I don't think Walker Kessler is going to get better away from the basket at Auburn. He might get better at his back-to-basket game if they force-feed it to him. But I'm not as sold that that's what's going to happen for Auburn moving forward with Walker Kessler. I mean, you even look at this own roster. Has Devin Cambridge gotten better? I think Devin Cambridge got better in other areas of his game, but maybe not in terms of being able to shoot the three. He's got better as a rebounder and a defender. And then you talk about Alan Flanagan. Alan Flanagan had a massive increase, but then this year took a step back. Alan Flanagan may be one of the first examples that we can say if he takes another step forward next year coming back off of the injury. But there's been a long list of players that have come to Auburn on the basketball front that have developed in many ways, 100%, have turned into better all-around basketball players. This is not an attack on Auburn basketball's development, but I'm not totally convinced that Auburn has wholesale changed or massively improved a lot of guys' offensive ability or field goal shooting. Let's head to the phone lines now. We got Zach Blackerby of the Locked On Auburn podcast and Auburn Daily on with me now here in this segment. Zach, how's it going, man?
Hey, it's good. It's good. How are things in the studio, bud?
It's going great. Rocking solo today. I'm glad that you're able to get on with me today.
Sure.
And want to talk a little Auburn basketball with you. I know you may have caught the tail end of that conversation, and it's probably something that not a lot of people necessarily want to admit or hear, but we've been talking about some NBA draft prospects for Auburn as far as Jabari Smith and Walker Kessler are concerned. It's pretty much a foregone conclusion for most people that Jabari Smith will be in the NBA draft. But Walker Kessler, where do you stand? Is it better for him to come back or move on?
For Walker's point of view?
Yes.
I think he needs to get drafted. I think it's a similar thing as like what we saw with JT Thor last year. I mean, there's clear things that he needs to fix and work on, but the NBA is so much, I mean, it's different than the NFL draft. The NBA draft is all about traits, and his traits aren't going to change from this year to next year. So, I think he should go get his money.
What were your takeaways and thoughts on what happened with Auburn basketball this past Sunday before we switched to football and spring practice and whatnot?
I don't think they showed up, man. I don't know if they were tired. I don't know if they just – I don't know if they got punched in the mouth early, and they kind of rallied towards the end of the first half, and then that was it. They didn't have an answer for what Miami was doing in transition. And over the course of 40 minutes, instead of Auburn wearing down the other team, it was Miami wearing down Auburn, which was crazy. It's crazy to see.
Speaking with Zach Blackerby of the Locked On Auburn podcast, as well as Auburn Daily, of course, things have to be changing a little bit for you guys going into the spring season and whatnot, spring football content, as well as baseball and softball stuff going on. What's your biggest storyline for the Auburn football season going into spring practice?
Oh, it's quarterbacks. It's always about quarterbacks. And, you know, can TJ Finley do enough with Zach Calzada being, you know, limited throughout the next few weeks? Can TJ Finley separate himself from the pack? And, you know, by all accounts, it seems like he's had a good start. It's early. It's still, you know, March. And so there's a long way to go, but, you know, based on what we've been able to see so far and what we've been able to hear, his accuracy seems to be cleaned up a ton, which is obviously a big talking point. But we'll see what happens there. We'll see where D. Davis falls in the depth chart. And, you know, does a guy like Robbie Ashford jump ahead of him? And then, of course, what's the ripple effect if all that happens? So, to me, it's quarterback. Of course, it's going to be interesting to always see the two deep for the offensive line, especially with those tackle spots. And then, you know, who's going to step up at wide receiver? Jay Fair, on like, what, his fourth or fifth practice, already in the two deep for at that slot position. So those are all fun things to watch right now.
Speaking with Zach Blackerby of the Locked On Auburn podcast and Auburn Daily here with us for our first segment of hour number two. Zach, talking about this quarterback battle, of course, there's talk about how limited or what Zach Calzada could do in practice. How do you think that affects the structure or positioning of this quarterback battle in the spring and how legitimate it may be at this current point?
I think whoever wins the battle this spring then has to win it again against Calzada in the fall. I think that's all it is. Whatever that may be, and I can't stress, you know, I think this is TJ Finley's job as much as Auburn people don't want to hear it. I think TJ Finley is Auburn's quarterback. But that's it. That's it, though. I mean, and people want to really dig into this and say, well, if this happens, you know, whatever. But I think it's pretty cut and dry. I think, you know, you can't really compete with somebody until they're able to play, and Zach Calzada can't play right now.
Talking about TJ Finley, you seem to be pretty confident in his ability at the top of the depth chart right now. You know, what do you like about TJ Finley in comparison to Zach Calzada with your ear to the ground right now?
Yeah, you know, and I wouldn't say that I said that. You know, I think he's going to be the guy. You know, I don't know if it's necessarily going to be a successful offense for the Tigers, but
sure.
You know, I think it's T.J. Finley's job. And, you know, can Calzada overtake that in a limited time and fall? And I don't know the answer to that question. My gut says no. So I think Finley has good traits. Don't get me wrong. I don't think we've seen him be able to pull all of what he is able to do together yet, but he's obviously got the size that you want. I think he has pocket presence to some extent. I think some of it still needs to be developed, but, man, you don't have to worry about him leaving the pocket like Auburn fans did with Bo Nix. That guy ain't going anywhere. But also, like, it's not all on T.J. Finley. I mean, you just look at, you know, these videos of practice that are kind of surfacing all over the place, and I'm sure a lot of the folks listening right now have watched some of those. And you just look at these position groups practicing, and you see the edge players, and you see the running backs, and you see the linebackers, and it's like, man, okay, cool. These guys look like starting SEC players. It's fantastic. And then these wide receivers roll around, and it's just like, man, what has happened to that room, especially yesterday with Javarius Johnson not being there? It's just like, what is going on? And so, you know, Finley needs help. Whoever's the quarterback is going to need help, and it stinks because they're going to be put in a situation where they're probably going to underperform to a lot of people's expectations unless they can get some, you know, major personnel change over the summer.
Looking at those position groups that you just mentioned that seem to be lagging behind right now, how far behind are they maybe to their counterparts in the Southeastern Conference?
So, like, with the wide receiver position, I mean, Noah, answer me this. How many of Auburn's wide receivers would start at Alabama, Georgia, LSU, or Texas A&M?
Zero.
Right, right, exactly. So, I mean, that's a big deal. That's a big deal. And that's really the only position I think you can say that about. You could argue and probably win the argument with me if you wanted to say offensive line, but, like, that is a big deal. And when you look at what those guys are recruiting – and when you look at what the, you know, they're recruiting on the defense to cover these dudes, like, that's a big deal. And it's catching up. And so, you know, you see guys like Corey Rucker, you know, the Arkansas State player that is, I think, has to be the top of Auburn's priority list. You know, he's a guy that could really, I think, help this room get a lot better. But, I mean, outside of that, it's just like Auburn has not been able to land these dudes. And I think that's concerning.
What do you think the reason is for that Auburn can't land these guys?
I don't know. I think a lack of a track record is one thing. But, I mean, that's what's so crazy about it. It's with receivers and tackles. You know, Auburn's getting these guys on campus, these transfers on campus, and two or three days later they put out their top five, and Auburn's not even on there. After Auburn kind of showed them everything they have to offer, as well as, you know, a clear path to playing time. And these guys consistently aren't interested. And that's something that this coaching staff has to figure out. I think bringing in Ike Hilliard's a great first step. I mean, I love that hire. It's probably my favorite position hire out of Auburn in a long, long time. I just think it's a home run. But we'll see. It sounds like he had a good visit with Corey Rucker this weekend. I think that's the first step with all of them.
Zach, we appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today. Tell everybody what all content they can expect that you're putting out and how they can keep up with you, my man.
Yeah, Locked On Auburn, wherever you get your podcasts, also on YouTube if that's your sort of thing, and written content at auburndaily.com. That is Sports Illustrated's Auburn site, auburndaily.com. Thanks, Noah.
Appreciate it, Zach. Hope you have a good rest of your afternoon.
Thanks, bud.
That was Zach Blackerby of the Locked On Auburn podcast and Auburn Daily with us here for this segment. Definitely, you know, there's a lot for Auburn football to work through this spring, and I'll be interested to see what they look like on A-Day, and I'll just leave it at that. Tuesday edition of On the Line, Noah Gardner in the studio with you on ESPN 106.7 and Fox Sports Central Alabama. Phone lines are open for the rest of the show, 334-321-1390. We want to hear from you, whatever's on your mind going on in the sports world. We've talked a lot of Auburn basketball today. And I'm happy with all the callers. Thank you for all of our guests that have come on today's show. It's been an excellent show. And if you missed any of it, go and find the podcast wherever you get your podcast. Today's topic that we've been digging into, and it's been an elongated topic considering I'm only on shooting guard and it's hour number two, but it's a too early look at Auburn's depth chart for next year. And it's assuming that Walker Kessler and Jamar Smith go to the league. And it's also not accounting for guys that could very well transfer out. And I would imagine Auburn will see some roster attrition with some guys transferring out. We just haven't gotten to those guys yet. And I'm talking about the backcourt with Auburn and why I'm a little concerned about the backcourt going into next year, because I don't know if some of these guys are going to improve as jump shooters from this year to next year. And that's concerning because of their affinity to shoot the three. And I'm talking now about the shooting guard position, because we talked about the point guard position. Now we're number one, Zepp Jasper, Wendell Green Jr., and Trey Donaldson. I think in that order, Wendell could improve maybe and hop over Zepp. But I think Bruce likes Zepp's calm personality, ability to not turn the basketball over, and strong defense to set the tone for the game. And then Wendell will still play the majority of the minutes, maybe even 30 minutes in a game. But I get to the shooting guard position. I think Katie Johnson's the starter. Once again, Bruce likes to set the tone defensively. Katie Johnson does just that. It's the offensive game that I think needs to flesh out a little bit from a more consistent standpoint. And you like Katie Johnson attacking the rim. I think his playmaking can come along a little bit, needs to be better at passing the basketball, especially when he gets to the rim, because somebody's open, because everybody's crashing down on KD when he drives to the bucket. He's going to draw the attention of the big to contest the shot because they know he's not passing. So if he would just come along a little bit as a passer, we saw in the Jacksonville State game, he had 7 assists. When he finally just gives it up, good things happen typically, because he typically does draw players committing to him when he gets to the rim. The other issue that I'm a little bit concerned about at the shooting guard position is overall jump shooting, three-point shooting ability, consistency there. And Katie Johnson can hit it some nights. Other nights, you might see 2 or 3 air balls. And that's not exaggerating. We saw it in the Texas A&M game of the SEC tournament. Some nights it's on, some nights it is way off. And I was talking about, and I've talked about this for a couple of segments, and I'm trying to string all the thoughts together and get them clumped up into one segment here, but I've talked about the track record with this coaching staff being able to develop shooters. Who has truly improved as a jump shooter under Bruce Pearl? Has seen a really solid increase. Don't tell me they got better 33% to 34%. Don't give me that. I don't want to hear that. I want to know, What guy left his bracket, like his tier of shooting ability, and entered into another tier? What guy legitimately left his tax bracket, if you will, and went up, right? Okay, like what guy legitimately has done that under Bruce Pearl? And I'm having a hard time finding somebody. I think Bryce got marginally better I think he definitely got better in it from a consistency standpoint. But it took him 4 years to get there, I think. His senior year is by far his most consistent, but you could even say even then he was a little streaky. And I think Jared Harper became more consistent. And those are maybe the two guys that I can say under Bruce that, like, legit, from start to finish, when they stepped on campus, legitimately improved as a jump shooter. And I think it was easier to see those two guys improve because Jared Harper and Bryce Brown already came in with the tools to be great shooters. That's not that hard to develop somebody who's already got that skill. They just became more consistent, I think. But I do believe there's a long list of guys who, what they were when they came on campus as a jump shooter, that's how they finished. And Al Flanagan's an interesting case right now because he took a massive jump from his freshman year to his sophomore year, and an injury possibly has derailed that. Will he ever get back to what he was when he was a sophomore? Will he ever get back to that? And is it possible also for Alan Flanagan to be successful as a non-ball dominant player? Because that's what his role is on this team moving forward. It's clear. Bruce said he's excited to build this thing around Jalen Williams moving forward. Wendell Green Jr. is a ball-dominant player. Katie Johnson's a ball-dominant player. Alan Flanagan, like, can he succeed off the ball? And in his 2 years where he has played off the ball, it hasn't been great. And so will he improve more as a catch-and-shoot guy off the wing? Will his jump shot improve? Because, once again, I can go back to a list of players. Daniel Purifoy, Malik Dunbar. Samir Dowdy got better 1 year and then went back down the next year by about 9%. Did I already say Malik Dunbar? Javon McCormick didn't really see a massive increase in his shooting ability. Devin Cambridge on this team right now has definitely not improved as a three-point shooter. I just kind of breaking down just guys' general shooting ability. I don't think we've seen somebody in Bruce Pearl's tenure, and maybe it's one. Ooh, you got me with one, okay? I'm just saying there are more examples of guys who did not take a massive step forward in their shooting ability, and that's not a slight. I don't want people to think that's a slight with this coaching staff at all, because they have improved players in countless other ways. Rebounding, defense, playmaking, ball handling, top general basketball awareness, ability to fit within their role, 100%. They have definitely improved guys. Weight room, guys' bodies have transformed. They have improved guys. They have a very successful track record in developing players in pretty much every other area, with the exception of maybe jump shooting. It's the one area where I don't know if they fixed the guys. I don't know if I can find a guy where they fixed someone's broken shot. And that scares me for this backcourt because, newsflash, Wendell Green Jr. shot worse than 30% this year from three. He shot 29%. Katie Johnson was really streaky. I don't have his exact numbers in front of me. I need to go and look at it. And Zepp Jasper was 35% from three, which was great. And Trevor's going to find me KD's, but he didn't take the three enough. And when volume came a thing for Zepp Jasper, it wasn't dropping. Let's head to the phone lines again, 334-321-1390, or toll free at 888-32-7502. Brett with me on the line. Brett, what's up, my man?
Hey, one guy who really improved his shot, especially before he got hurt, was Anthony McLemore.
When I like that.
When he came to Auburn, he couldn't stand on the river, riverbank, throw it in the river.
But, I like that.
He actually was I guess it was his sophomore year. He was a real good shooter.
I agree with that. And I forgot about McLemore because, you know, they got to the point where they started games with Anthony McLemore taking a three. They had a play specifically designed for that. At the start of his career, it was a lob, and then it transitioned to him taking a straightaway three. So I like that. That's not it. But, yeah. But do you agree with my sentiments on how there's kind of hasn't been a great track record of improving shooters?
And somewhat. But I will say this on Teddy Johnson. He has shot almost 39% from three last year, and it's starting to come out after the first George game. He had his finger hurt.
Yeah.
So I can't tell you for sure that did have an effect, but the guy did shoot, I think 38.6 or 38.7% from three the previous year. So I think he'll be fine. As far as shooting the ball, Green, I think he needs to develop a floater more than anything. I think that'll open his game up because people won't be able to challenge his shot as much because right now, I mean, he's not big enough or a good enough leaper to actually take it all the way to the hole. He's going to have to develop a floater.
I agree with that, and I don't know if he can play off 2 feet because he's really small. So I don't disagree with that. There's a account out there named Hoops Vision. He runs a newsletter, and he's a former basketball analyst, and he does a weekly newsletter where he breaks down film and whatnot. And he actually did, and I'm not saying that this isn't true for Wendell. I actually agree with you. I think Wendell's game would really improve if he could flesh out the mid-range game. Villanova is one of the highest two-point percentage teams in the country, and they take like zero floaters. It's just really interesting to see some of the teams that over time don't take a whole lot of floaters, but their two-point percentage increases a lot. I don't disagree with you, just kind of food for thought.
Well, I guess later on.
Appreciate it, Brett. That was Brett calling in. Yeah, I thought that was really interesting. Just kind of, I really enjoy looking at Hoop Vision and what Jordan Sperver does on that page that he has in that newsletter that he's got running. And I found that very interesting. I stumbled upon an article actually recently about like floaters and do they work and are they good decisions. And he's got some interesting stats to break it down. Teams, and it's over not just one season, but like multiple years. Like there's trends here. And it's like which teams shoot the highest 2-point percentage. He's got it on a XY coordinate plane, and which guys shoot which teams shoot the fewer floaters versus how high their 2-point percentage is, and teams that typically shoot more floaters end up being closer to the 2-point percentage average in the country or below average, whereas teams that shoot fewer floaters end up having a higher 2-point percentage, which makes sense because once again you're taking a floater because a big committed to you and you're trying to get a floater over the big into the bucket, right? You are literally taking a one-handed jump shot moving towards or away from the basket, and you're trying to get it over a big because you can't take him on one-on-one. But that's the exact thing that Wendell Green probably does need to improve upon because he is a little bit too small to take on some of these bigs, and he's not getting fouls called for him. So I don't disagree with Brett there. I think a floater could help out his game. I was just throwing that out there, food for thought, interesting statistic. something that I can't claim to have researched myself. I just saw Hoop's vision on that, and he's got a Substack, and man, there's just some incredible content there about just breaking down the game of basketball, and he's got some really good stats to back it up to back it up too. Trevor got me Katie Johnson's stats for this year, and Brett is right. I do remember him hurting his hand. I don't know how much of a factor that was moving forward. It very well could have been. Katie Johnson went from shooting 39% at Georgia from three to 29% this year for Auburn. Dropped also 6% overall on his field goal percentage with an increase of 5 minutes per game. Just interested to see how this backcourt's going to develop shooting the basketball moving forward. You're on the line with Noah Gardner on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central, Alabama. Number to call, 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. I'm talking about a too early depth chart and what that looks like for Auburn basketball. It's on kind of some reservations I have with the program moving forward. And look, there's definitely some talent on this team moving forward, but what concerns me maybe the most, and a note that I have written down, is I'm not super pumped about this roster at the moment, and I think there is some work that they need to do in the offseason to maybe change this, but I just don't think there's an alpha right now. They're clearly lacking that dude that you turn to. And great teams have that dude. There's nothing wrong with having that great dude. Other players need to chip in and be good, but there's no problem with saying that great teams have a guy that's the face of the team and is clearly that guy that can be a team leader and can go and get you a bucket. You look across the country right now, if teams still playing in March, they've got that guy. That's the reason why Auburn's not still playing in March right now. I mean, they had that guy, but those two guys didn't play well on Sunday. And I'm not pinning the loss on them. I think they played really hard. And Jabari Smith's one of the best basketball players, is the best. I'll change that. Jabari Smith is the best basketball player I've seen play at Auburn. Okay? And so, like, that's not me taking a shot at them. It's the reality. It did not help that Jabari Smith and Walker Kessler combined for like 3 for 22 on Sunday. I mean, I'm not blaming it on him. I'm just saying, I mean, that's part of it. That did not help. But you're looking at the team, you know, talking about this too early depth chart, I think, you know, areas where they're lacking maybe is an alpha, a guy that they can go to score, and then consistent three-point shooting. And I want to know if you can find a guy out there that, and Brett called in the previous segment and brought up Anthony McLemore. Like, I don't disagree. From his freshman year to his sophomore year, yes, he became a better three-point shooter. But after his sophomore year moving forward, the numbers aren't great. He went from 39% as a sophomore to 33% as a junior to 29% as a senior. So there was a steady decline there. And I'm not taking a shot at this coaching staff's ability to develop players. They are great at developing players, really, in a lot of different areas. But shooting is the one area where I don't know if we've seen somebody's game take off that didn't already come in with, like, that ability. And so I'm asking you, what players on this team have shown you that ability through their time on Auburn's campus right now? Wendell Green has. I want to see him be more consistent. I think there could be a Jared Harper-like trajectory there for Wendell Green. KD had it at Georgia, and maybe that injury hurt him there. That needs to become more consistent. I don't think he's Bryce Brown or anything like that. Auburn maybe was trying to recreate that, so I don't think that he's going to be like that, but he did shoot 39% of Georgia. That's very good. Maybe he can get back to that at Auburn. And then Alan Flanagan, bad his first year, better his second year. Third year, obviously, wasn't great because he was hurt. His fourth year at Auburn, what's that going to look like? And my only question about Alan Flanagan, starting at the small forward position, is can he play off the ball? Because the 2 years where his role has been off ball, where he's not been a ball-dominant player, it hasn't been good. The 1 year that he was a ball-dominant player, yes, it was good, but that was also not a very bad basketball team. And that may have been out of necessity and volume as opposed to truly what's best for the team moving forward. And Bruce Pearl's talking about building this team around Jalen Williams. And I like Jalen Williams. I think he's going to be a very good player. But I also ask you this. Look around the Southeastern Conference. Look around the country. Top teams in the country, right? How many teams are built around a player of Jalen that looks like Jalen Williams? That, like, has his skill set, has done what he's done at Auburn up to this point, which is good once again. But I think he's a good secondary or tertiary option from a scoring standpoint on a team. But I don't know if he's an alpha compared to what other teams' alphas look like in the country, even in the SEC. just interested, just food for thought. And all of this could be for naught, and they could end up developing and become beast, right? I'm just looking at the track record for Auburn up to this point. Head to the phone lines, 334-321-1390 or toll-free at 888-3275-02. Steve with me now on the line. Steve, what's up?
Hey, I agree with you on the jump shooting, but I think one of the things you got to look at is some of the players that we've actually recruited. When a kid gets to be a freshman in college, he is what he is when it comes to shooting. I mean, that stroke or that style has been ingrained in that and the way they do that by the time they're a freshman. And you look at the guys you're talking about, Flanagan does not have a good stroke. It's not a classic jump shot. He shoots off the side of the hand with weird spin. KD does have a good stroke. Zepp shoots from his face and forward. He can get hot, but it's not a classic stroke. Even Wendell, he's a face shooter. He brings it to his chin, makes himself smaller than he's supposed to be. I mean, you know, Jalen does shoot a classic jump shot. You know, arm extended, flick the wrist, you know, uses his height. It's hard to fix those at this point. I mean, we need to recruit some classic jump shooters, not, you know, weird golf swings and expect them to work. I mean, there's certain fundamentals that have to be taught in junior high and high school. I mean, foul shooting is one of them, too. So I don't know how you fix a poor fundamental jump shot once they get to college. I mean, you got to have – it's a hard thing to change, man, a really hard thing to change.
100%. I don't disagree with you there. And that's why – and kind of where this came from was with Walker Kessler and why I think he should go to the league, because there are shot coaches in the league. And I think there are many examples in the NBA of guys whose three-point shooting has massively improved when they got there that wasn't good in college. And sure, there's a fair share of guys who bust out. I mean, that's the truth of the league. But there are a lot of examples of coaches that got a hold of somebody that at least had something to work with, and they just took them to another level. Whereas I don't think this coaching staff has shown that, and I know that's what you're reiterating. I do want to say this. I think this coaching staff is good at developing pretty much every other aspect of these guys' games. Rebounding, defense, athleticism, what they could do to transform their bodies in the weight room, playmaking. I think we've seen many players improve in all of those areas. But it's the jump shooting. I'm with you. It's the jump shooting that concerns me a little bit.
Well, it's like a good defensive catcher that's never been thought, hey, you got to hit. I mean, it's not enough. I mean, you've got to be able to do them both. And I think they're going to go get some classic jump shooters. I think Bruce would probably want to is more comfortable with small ball. I mean, I think part of the thing with Kessler is he didn't know exactly how to use him. And, you know, Kessler doesn't have a bad form shooting the basketball. You know, he gets that shot off a lot quicker than Devin Cambridge does, who, you know, you would think, you know, he shoots from his waist, and that's a bad jump shot. Now, you're talking about the roster. I mean, I can see a chance where, I mean, you basically have four returning players. You got Zepp, you have Jay Will, you have
Wendell.
KD. No, I can see Wendell not coming back. I don't think if you bring in Donaldson and you go get a transfer point guard, Wendell can play one position only. And he got exposed in the second half of the year. I mean, he's not the explosive man that McCormick and Harper were. I mean, they could play at the rim or above the rim. How many times did you look at Harper's stats and he had eight rebounds and two dunks?
Yeah, I mean, he's dunked on some big players before.
And you saw later in the year when they brought two people out at Wendell, he had a hard time going forward instead of going backward. He didn't have the body strength to drive through. You know, I hope he comes back, but I mean,
I think that can be developed, though. I think his body can. I think those things. Bruce has shown the ability to bring some to flesh that out a little bit. I think that can improve. I even think it improved in Jared from his freshman year to his junior year.
Oh, absolutely. But you took a bouncy kid, a really bouncy kid.
You already had
it. Developed him into a strong kid. I mean, you saw him go through contact and not end up sprawled out on the floor looking for a foul. He made the bucket and talked trash on the way down.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's from a 5, they say it was 5'11". So that's from a 5'9 kid who could, you know, perform dunks. I mean, listen, this team did a great job this year. It's got a lot of flaws. You know, the other thing about Kessler, you're talking about him coming back. If Kessler was 6'11 or 6'10, I would say you'd probably come back, but you look through the history of people over 7 feet, the shelf life is short, knees and feet. The human body's not meant to be that big and play this game. And he's got to go get the money while he can get the money. I think coming back would improve him and he would get better. It would be good for Auburn. but he's one stress fracture in his heel from being Bill Walton. And that happens to big guys. And if he can get, you know, I think he's a smart enough kid that if he gets $6 million guaranteed, he should be set for life. So he's got to.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think he's got, and this is no slight against Bruce. This is just, there are better coaches in the NBA. And I think the coaches in the NBA can develop them just as much as Bruce. And I think they're going to actually do better than that. And he's going to get paid while doing it, right? So it just makes sense. I'm with you.
And there's no time limits, and there's no class, and there's no this, that, and the other. It's, you know, you get an apartment or a condo by the gym, and you're in the gym. I mean, you know, you listen to the Charles Barkley talking about, you know, Moses Malone telling him he was fat, and Charles said, I didn't have anything else to do but play basketball, and finally learned my nutrition, and you know, it turned him into a Hall of Famer. I'd love to see Walker come back, but I think Bruce, personally, is much more comfortable with three guards, two forwards, where the five can shoot the three and is more mobile, so that it's a pick and pop is more than a pick and roll, because eventually the pick and roll gets stopped, and you don't have a Harper and McCormick that can fight through the double team and then make the pass. Neither of them work. I mean, after the Missouri game, everybody said, you are not going to oop dump on us. And I can't remember the last one we got. It wasn't in garbage time.
Yep.
You know, and we didn't have an answer for it. We didn't have a guard that could fight through it. And, you know, hopefully Donaldson is Trey Donaldson. I think he might be big enough to do that if he's in. And is it what, Chance Wesleyan or what's his name?
Chance Westry.
Chance Westry. He's 6'5", I believe, and a true shooter. Like he can get his. And that's what we haven't had since 19 is guys that can get theirs that don't need help. Everybody, including Jabari, who's fantastic, they need a little bit of help. They need some help to get their points. And hopefully as a freshman, he'll show that he's a guy we can get the ball to and he can score it well, because we haven't had that since Harper. But, you know, I'm not going to complain. Listen, we weren't talking about Auburn basketball years ago. And Bruce is the best coach on campus. He makes it fun. There's nobody else, I think, in the world that could do what he's done in the time he's been here. And, you know, why sometimes in-game management drives me absolutely crazy, wouldn't trade him for the world. And if you started the season, you said, what, 27-5 or 6 or whatever we ended up, and make the Sweet 16, we had all taken it and sat in the clubhouse and watched everybody else play.
That's right. Appreciate the call, Steve. That was Steve on the line with us. I think you said that well. By no means, it's the things that I've talked about today. If I say something objectively, you know, if I say something objective about this team, and I see it as true, and I think that it's, you know, that there's factual evidence behind it, and it may not be positive, I don't want people to think that I'm saying that Bruce Pearl is not the right guy for the job. Bruce Pearl by far is the right guy for the job. No questioning about it. Right? That's not what I'm saying. And I know Steve, you know, and I'm glad Steve said that, because I think it's okay to point out things that maybe aren't positive right now with the Auburn basketball team, or if they're over the course of the season, even when they're having a great year. I mean, that's kind of been a message that I've sent this whole year, is that, like, they're not perfect, and no coach is perfect. There are different types of coaches, and just because you're a great coach or you're great at winning, right, doesn't necessarily mean that you possess all areas of coaching at a high level, right? I think Bruce is a great I think he's a great motivator. I think he's a great recruiter. I think he's a great program builder. I think he's a great sustainer. Steve talks about in-game stuff. You know, he mentioned how some in-game things can drive him crazy. I think that is an area where he lacks. We've seen time and time again Auburn lose games because of, I think, other teams maybe getting the leg up on X's and O's, right? And we've seen this Auburn team, this Auburn program, have similar issues to what we saw this year, just because guards were small and they brought double teams off of ball screens. I mean, that is on film for, like, years now against this Auburn team. But, you know, with that being said, also, like, you love the program. You love what the coach has done. He's the right man for the job, and, you know, he's done great things with the program. It's just really, 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 really difficult to win a national championship. It's really difficult to win an SEC championship, and this guy's done it on a rotating basis. So 100%, you know, this is not any slights or any knocks on Bruce Pearl. This is just me looking at the team and telling you what I think is my opinion, what I think is going on in areas where they need to improve. Now, I'll say this. Steve said something else that made me think, And I really enjoyed his phone call there. And if you want to call in, 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. I'm going to condense this into a very short statement or a couple of statements here about why I am concerned about this Auburn basketball team going into next year. And granted, there's time. There are LSU and a Florida commit that because their coaches left, those guys and their high-value players, five stars, man. And if there's a four-star, they're barely a four-star. I'm talking about guys who could change the outlook of the season just with their one commitment, right? There are guys out there that Auburn could go and get, and the transfer portal is going to be full of players in about a month that Auburn's going to be able to go after that can change the outlook of the season. Just like Auburn went from being a 12-13 win team, whatever they were last year, to what they were this year, right? I mean, that can change overnight. I think Alabama's going to experience the same similar type of change from this year to next year. I think Alabama's going to be a really good team next year with the players they got coming in, if Nate Oates is actually a good coach. Now, if he's not a good coach, then yeah, they can blow all that talent, right? But what Steve made me think was, man, looking at this roster, what's left, all of the great thing, all of what made the difference for Auburn this year, what took Auburn to like the levels that we saw them, what was best about this Auburn team is gone. And unfortunately, what is left on the roster, the flaws are left. I'm not talking about the players as flaws, but I'm talking about the things that Auburn did this year that were flaws. That's what's still present in the team and needs to be fixed. And people may not want to hear me say that, but it's the truth. There's not consistent jump shooting on this team. The best shooter on the team, the only reason why Auburn even was barely above 30% this year from three-point range, he's gone. Auburn's post presence that made them one of the best rim-protecting teams in the country, he's gone. I'd assume the two MVPs of this team are gone. And what's left is a lot of players that were really streaky this year and lost Auburn its fair share of games. All of those guys need to develop. And they need to go and get some guys out of the transfer portal. And if they do that, they'll be just fine. But heading into next year, what I'm looking at on the roster, I don't know if it's a tournament team. Now, that may be an exaggeration. And everybody's going to be like, oh, it'll be fine. And yes, it probably will be fine. They will go and find players. Bruce Pearl's a great recruiter. Once again, go back to the point that I just made. Bruce Pearl's a great recruiter, great program builder. He's going to go and fix that. But what's left right now definitely needs some work. Needs a lot of work for Auburn to be back in the dance next year. And there's nothing wrong with saying that. Nothing wrong with saying that whatsoever. Back on the Line, Noah Gardner with you on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Number to call, 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. We got time for maybe one more call if you want to call in. We got 3 minutes left in the show. It's been a great show. Thank you to Zab Blackaby of the Locked on Auburn podcast and Auburn Daily. That is the Sports Illustrated site for Auburn, as well as Britt Bowen of the Auburn Sports Network. Back in hour number one, if you missed any of the show today, go and find the podcast wherever you get your podcast. We'll be back tomorrow live with you at our normal time. Jacob Goins will be back with me if you want to just some options for you to listen to today and this afternoon. If you're out in your car driving around, you're looking for stuff to listen to, you got The Drive with Bill Cameron. Follow me from 4 to 6 p.m. here on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama, as well as over on our sister station, AU 100, 100.3 FM here in the Auburn Opelika area. Jacob Goins is on the call for Lee Scott Baseball against Glenwood. Some rivalry action there and some good baseball there if you want to tune in to his call of that. We're going to wrap up the show today with our Point Broadband High School Player of the Week. This week's Point Broadband High School Player of the Week is Auburn High Baseball's Cade Ballou. The junior outfielder went 9-for-18 for the Tigers last week, smashing one double, one triple, and two home runs. He posted 9 RBI and came home to score 8 times. Auburn High Baseball comes into the week 13-2 overall. Cade Ballou, your Point Broadband High School Player of the Week. Point Broadband, smarter, faster fiber internet, point-broadband.com. About 2 minutes left of the show here. Let's get into our final segment here with Final Take.
Final Take.
All right, today's Final Take, and it's going to be continuing to echo what we've talked about all day long with Auburn basketball. Where do we go from here? And I said in the previous segment that you look at the roster and what's left. And we'll continue to talk about this depth chart moving forward into tomorrow and the rest of the week. But when you look at what's left, there's a lot that needs to be cleaned up. The best parts about this year's basketball team are moving on to the NBA, are not going to be on the program anymore. And you don't know who's going to transfer out. And I don't think it's going to be anybody unhappy or anything like that. I don't think that the sky's falling or anything like that. But the reality is, you look at the roster, it's fair to say, yeah, there's some work to do here. They're going to have 11 guys on scholarship, and you get 13 total. So, I mean, they already have two that they need to add. Could be LSU players or Florida players decommitting because of their coaching changes. A couple of five-stars floating around that you could get in the mix with. As well as the transfer portal is going to be full of players soon. So there's time to fix this. But the reality is, and I think the coaching staff knows this, there's some roster building to do. There's some team building to do yet again. But honestly, we all know this. This is the new reality in college basketball. And I don't know if Auburn's going to turn into a one-and-done machine. But let's be real. Auburn's had four guys go to the NBA in the last 4 years, whatever it was. Chuma Okeke went, Isaac Okoro, Sharif Cooper, JT Thor all left after 1 year, and now Jabari Smith. Let's just be real. Auburn's doing it on a regular basis now. Not to mention transfers with the transfer portal. This is the new reality. That's it for another edition of On the Line. We'll be back with you tomorrow. Same time, same place. You know where to find us.